So with that, would you please introduce yourself to the committee and the members here, and
sure.
And
should I put this on? Is this yes? Good afternoon. My name is Mike Gimo. I work for ISO Newman, but I'm here with my colleague Eric Wilkinson. We were joking on the ride up that we feel like since it's Christmas season, it's more than coincidence. Our wives might be responsible for you inviting us here, knowing that we'd have to go right by Freeport to spend some money and to get some nice gifts on the way back. So, coincidence or not, we're not sure, but we'll try to stop and spend some money in the name.
Just don't put it in the rain.
That's fair, and I won't put it on my roof either. So hopefully this will be an interactive dialogue. We want it to be your meeting, so just let us know if there's specific issues that we want to talk about. There are three topics that we wanted to hit on: provide the general overview of the ISO, be very quick in that regard. Then we'll touch on the retirement study and some of the generation retirements that are out there right now. And finally, Eric will talk about distributed generation and some of the work that we're doing there. I think everyone in the room should probably have the handouts that we'll talk from, so I'll try to announce what slide we're on so you can follow along. So on slide three is the perfunctory who we are, what we do. The ISO is a not-for-profit located in Holyoke, Massachusetts. We're regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. Our tariffs, our market rules, everything we do is subject to FERC jurisdiction and FERC oversight. We're independent of the companies doing business in the energy market. This allows us to be objective and unbiased in our main functions, and our main functions include: we operate the regional power system, we turn power plants on, we turn them off, we schedule maintenance of transmission and generation, we ensure the adequate supply of generation to meet the demand in the region. We administer various electricity markets, including our wholesale energy market, our capacity market, and our ancillary service markets. And we do power system planning for the entire region. We are responsible for the bulk power system with respect to transmission. That's your 115 kV and greater. The 69 kV and less are subject to the local distribution company. Those are referred to as distribution lines. They are subject to PUC jurisdiction, and they are administered by your utilities, Banner Hydro, CMP, and Newport Service. On slide four, you'll see a very rough picture of New England with a blue blurb on top. That is intended to show you that the ISO is the RTO, the independent system operator, for the five New England states and the vast majority of Maine, but not Aroostook County and parts of Washington County. As you know, they're part of the New England, the Northern Maine Independent System Administrator, and they are actually interconnected with New Brunswick. So for power to come from that area, it actually needs to be wheeled back into New Brunswick through the ties into the ISO. On slide five, you'll see a couple of key facts about the New England power system. We have 14 million residents, 6.5 million meters. That's how many meter customer utilities have. We have about 32,000 megawatts of steel in the ground, and another 2,000 or so megawatts of demand resources, 8,400 miles of transmission. Again, that's 115 kV and greater. The vast majority of that is actually 115 kV. We have about 5,500 to almost 6,000 miles of 115 kV in the line, and then another 2,500 megawatts or so of your 345 kV. There's some 230 in New Hampshire, and I think some in Massachusetts. I don't think there's any in Maine. We have 13 interconnections with our neighbors, which allows us to import and export based on price and based on the needs of each system. So we have two interconnections with New Brunswick through Maine. We have two interconnections with Quebec through Vermont. And then we have another nine interconnections with New York through Vermont, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. We are a summer peaking system. However, you might find that hard to believe given this cold weather. But we are a summer peaking system. We peaked at 28,130. We did that in 2006 at the end of a long heat wave. We We'll normally peak out at the third, fourth, fifth day of the heat wave. We had the second highest electric demand day earlier this year. I think it was July 19th. We had some demand response that was put on and energy efficiency since the 2006 heat wave. So, but for those investments, we probably would have surpassed the all-time peak just this past year. We would have surpassed it this year. Our energy market's about $5 billion in 2012. It's been as high as $12 billion. As you know, it's a function of the fuels that drive the energy prices, and traditionally that's natural gas. So as natural gas prices go rise, so too does the total cost of the market. Slide number six shows you the strategic planning initiative. Basically, a few years ago, the ISO and the various stakeholders in the region identified challenges for the region, and then collaboratively, we worked towards remedying these challenges. And there were five challenges that came out. Today, Eric and I will focus on the retirement of generation and the integration of a greater amount of variable resources. So those will be the issues that we'll spend some time on today. I'm going to go to the retirement slide, and I'm on slide eight, and I want to just quickly touch on the strategic transmission analysis. We have about 8,000 megawatts of coal and oil in the system. Most of these plants are 40 years of age or older. They are what we've determined as to be at risk of retirement. These are the units that are generally older, dirtier, less efficient. They don't run a lot relative to the natural gas plants. Many of these were your traditional baseload plants that are running all the time and have now been pushed to the margin, but based on natural gas prices. Many of these units rely on our capacity market to be available when needed. These units represent about 4% of the energy in 2012. With that said, on the peak day of July, they represented almost a quarter of the coal energy. So even though these units don't run frequently, often when they're called on on peak days to perform and to be available. So they certainly have a role in the system. But we wanted to look at the transmission system and how it could respond if there were retirements. So that was the objective of this recent study. Slide nine shows you the units that we assume to be out of service by 2020. It has the ages as of 2020. As you can see, that they're all generally over 40 years old, and they range from 40 to into their 60s. They actually include the Yarmouth unit here in Maine.
On the oil-fired ones, is there any possibility of converting to gas in any of those, or is it not? Did they just shut them down?
I'll say a couple. You have to specifically talk to the generator to tell you whether or not they could fit into any of their financials or whether it could work. Obviously, I think there's, I suggest that can happen. Some of these units are dual fuel units right now that they burn oil and or coal. So they have dual fuel possibilities. Some of them do gas, and there are various iterations of permutations, and you can modify the units. They do have, I think what I want to bring your attention to, the system has been developed around these units. If you look at the system, you'll see a lot of these units have been around for a long time. Transmission's been built around them. The objective is to get the power from those plants out. So in a very simplistic term, it'll look like a bicycle wheel with the spokes coming out of it. So there is transmission located there. So there's an inherent value in those plants that there's transmission there. So that would further be a calculus of whether or not you would retrofit the plants to use it as a fuel. Slide number 10 shows you, we've been to this committee numerous times, and obviously one of the concerns that I've heard since I've been working at the ISO is the high cost of transmission. This is one of the values the value propositions of transmission and spending a lot of money, investing in transmission. We have, in our study, we included the development of planned and proposed and in-construction transmission lines. So we wanted to know what the system would look like in 2020, and we modeled it with all these new transmission lines in service. And what that does is it actually allows you to facilitate retirements of some plants, but it also improves deliverability. And by that I mean, by having a robust transmission system, you can get the power from remote places into the hub and then throughout the system. And so there's a significant value to the region by having a robust transmission system where the power can flow from the hub to the rest of the region. Slide 11 highlights some of the results. So we have over 8,000 megawatts of potential retirements, and we can. Your question, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. The MPRP, the power liability from Maine, that was strictly reliability. It did not increase output. Is that a true statement?
I think your question, what I'm hearing, is did it improve the transfer capabilities from being able to get power out of Maine?
No, did it increase the volume of electrons that we could ship out of Maine, or did it simply make those electrons more reliable to the south?
It improved the back. The main function of the MPRP project was to improve the backbone of the Maine system. In the process, there was modest increases in the amount of power that you'll be able to ship out.
Do you know, ballpark, is that 10%, 20%?
I think, off the top of my head, I recall 300 megawatts, but let that be subject to check. 300 megawatts or so. Ballpark. I can subject to check, I'll find out.
It is incredible.
Modest increases. Yeah, modest increases. So some of the highlights of the study. So if we have 8,000 megawatts that retire, we can retire 1,000 megawatts. That we know. But we will need about 5,000 megawatts to be replaced, repowered, retrofitted, what have you. We will need about 5,000 of those megawatts, but they can be anywhere within the system because of the transmission that's been built out. So for the most part, you can put it, so long as you build the unit where it can get to the hub, so it can get into the bulk power system and into what we call the hub power, our greater Central Massachusetts, Greater Central Massachusetts, then it can be distributed throughout the system.
And you said you connect into Canada as well. So would that be a method of delivering, heaven forbid I should say it out loud, the Canadian hydro south as well through those lines?
Through the existing lines?
Yeah.
That is happening now. There's power, their power.
But increased capacity.
Some could probably increase. Well, it's also, you can get power, more Canadian power to the hub. But the tie line with New Brunswick hasn't changed. So it's still the same amount that they can bring in. But you should be able to get more, theoretically, into the region, as opposed to staying just there. So, like I said, some of the value is that even though you'll still need about 5,000 megawatts, you can put them just about anywhere so long as they can get to the hub. So as long as they can get into the system, 900 megawatts will be specifically needed in specific areas, and that's 500 in southeastern Massachusetts and then another 400 in Connecticut. There are constraints in those areas, so they need specific generation to help satisfy specific load. So they have transmission constraints, and you need specific power in a specific location. So moving on to slide 12, what once started as a theoretical study, we've seen actual retirements come, and what was theoretical and academic is no longer. We're actually seeing these units retire. Recently, we've had these 3,400 megawatts of units requesting to retire. So the purpose of being here is to let you know that the system is changing. We see units seeking to retire. We see the DG being added. So there's a lot going on, and we wanted to bring that to your attention. Those are the areas I was going to discuss. I can answer some questions as we go, or we can just move right on to the DG, whatever is the pleasure.
Senator Youngblood.
Yes, so what is ISO doing to help to increase gas capacity coming into New England to replace some of this?
Yes. The ISO's role is right now not to build capacity. But what we've been doing is improving our communication skills with the gas pipelines to get a better idea as to when there will be constraints on the system, so that we know to dispatch other units in advance. A lot of our units that we would need to supplement gas are older units that have long startup times. So by improving the communication between ourselves and the gas pipelines, we can prepare the region to be better prepared for gas-related issues. We're working to continue to improve the markets, to send the proper signals so that development gets made and that the market responds accordingly. So this is something that we've been doing.
Can you comment on any discussions that may be going on how ISO New England might be beneficial in acting as an agent for appropriately allocating the costs among the New England states for a pipeline expansion?
I know that the ISO and ISO's management has been working with the various regulators and the governor's offices. I think it would be premature to talk other than to say that conversations are happening.
I would just add, I think our major role would be to, as an entity that can provide data for the discussion.
My recollection from our conversation when we were down with you discussing this whole issue, that the use of natural gas is over 50% now for the cost of the 51%.
52% of, in 2012, 52% of the region's generation came from natural gas, and about 43% of the total capacity. So by capacity, I mean every unit is on what percentage would come from that fuel. And so it's about 43%. So obviously those units are on a lot because they actually represent 52% of the total capacity.
Can you give us some idea where they were, the whole committee, where they were 10 years ago?
Sure. Off the top of my head, and we have additional information, but off the top of my head, actually, I'll put it up. It was about 6%. In 1990, gas represented about 6% of generation. In 2000, it was 18%, and now it is where it is. So we've seen a pretty steady growth from the gas.
And that has been the replacement for coal and for heating oil?
Coal and oil. And there are conversions with respect to from home heating on the gas.
Yes. As well. And you mentioned that there are discussions going on between the states. Was that facilitated by the Omnibus Energy Bill in Maine? Is discussions in the law that we passed talking about capacity?
I'm not sure if one was the specific reason. I'm sure it didn't hurt. I know it's an issue that is it's not just the main issue. It's a regional issue. Everyone recognizes that fact, sees that Maine did something, and I think the fact that he did something is symbolic of the magnitude of the issue. I could probably pull some specific numbers up and provide that to Gene as well. I was going off the top of my head with respect to those numbers, but exponential growth in gas over
the past. Do you understand that Maine's the only state that has backstopped pipeline capacity?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Sure, thanks. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity today. It's a pleasure to be here. Senator Cleveland, your story about the law reminded me of a